Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast and YouTube channel. Listen, make sure you subscribe today. You can go to iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can go to our YouTube channel, True Underdog, or you can visit trueunderdog.com and subscribe to all of it.
Damn, 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 True Underdog. Damn, damn, unleash damn, the power within. Damn, damn, damn.
Jason Waller here, True Underdog Podcast. Underdogs, I have got an amazing show for you today. Also an announcement, True Underdog Podcast now became the #3 entrepreneurial podcast, passing Gary Vee. I got love for Gary Vee, but hey, we're trying to come for that #1 spot. Thank you, listeners and followers. We appreciate that. But I've got a guest today that's amazing. We share a mutual friend in Jordan Harbinger. This guy has done some major things. He's going to come out here and enlighten us, inspire us, and share some of his stories. This is my man, John Levy. He is the founder of the Influencers Dinner, founder of Inspired Culture and IFG, a 2 a.m. principal, and an author of You're Invited, a Wall Street Journal and New York Times bestseller. John, how are you doing, my man?
I'm phenomenal. I'm super excited to be here with you, and I can't wait to share some crazy stories.
Well, I'm super excited to have you here. You know, we both love Jordan Harbinger. He's such a great dude, a great personality. I appreciate you coming on the show. And I want to talk about where it all began. You know, you stated previously in your first job, you were helping your dad with construction and repairs to his childhood house in Israel. Talk about your childhood days, John, and what that looked like.
Oh, wow. I was probably the geekiest, least popular kid in my entire school. I mean, in fact, one day in eighth grade, my school teacher came in and said, everybody, you're going to secretly submit two people you want to sit with and two people you don't want to sit with, and we're going to rearrange the seating chart. And I found out two things that day. One was there was one student nobody wanted to sit with. And the second thing was that I was that kid. So I was literally like the class, like exiled. Nobody wanted to hang out with me. And I figured that if I could understand how people behave and understand what affects our decisions, then maybe I could figure out how to make some friends. And that was a weird journey.
Well, would you call that bullying or just, you know, were you neglected as a kid? Like from peers, were they just like, they just didn't want to be around you? Were they bullying you? Like what was...
So the truth is that there were two things. One is I'm dyslexic. I was the last kid in my class to learn to read. I'd be made fun of because I couldn't read very well or really struggled in a lot of classes. But the issue was, I think, that I was into things that were really geeky, like comic books and computers. And back in the 80s, that wasn't cool. Like being into Star Trek wasn't a cool thing. Now, if you know the Marvel superheroes, you're cool. Like Comic-Con has hundreds of thousands of people that go to it and get dressed up and enjoy and indulge those things. Back then, nobody had technology. It wasn't like a thing that people accepted. And so because I was into it, I was a loser. And so I was a social outcast.
You were actually ahead of your time is what it was. They just didn't know it yet, right? So we're going to talk about Marvel then. So are you a DC fan or a Marvel fan?
Oh, I'm a character fan, right?
Who's so your favorite character?
I love Batman because I figured if I could train hard enough, he's the one that I could become. And I couldn't. And then I really love the character of Peter Parker and Spider-Man. And the reason I love Parker is that when he was designed, the creators, it was Stanley and I think one other person, maybe it was Jack Kirby, I can't really remember right now, literally said, what if we give this character every characteristic that nobody really wants? We'll make him unpopular. We'll give him acne. We'll make him super geeky. And back then it was even worse than I had it. We'll have him be bullied. And then what we're going to do is we're going to put him in an extraordinary situation where he's going to have to come face to face with all those things, right? Here's a situation where he has now incredible strength, incredible ability to like stop those bullies. But he realizes that what's more important is to keep his identity secret so he can actually make a difference. And so he continues to play the role of like the geeky kid that's non-athletic. And I think that there's something really incredible about that, that Peter Parker's character always makes the tough decision and it doesn't always work out for him. And there's something really kind of, there's some truth behind that, that sometimes when we make the tough decisions and do the right things, the world ends up better off, but we might not always end up with the results we want.
Well said. Well said. I grew up a huge Superman fan. And then, you know, Marvel got really big recently. And so I've always been a Hulk fan too. And the argument was, can Hulk beat Superman? I was like, no way. I love Hulk, but Superman's the guy. But after all,
Superman
would definitely win. And I love Superman. But now that I've watched all the Marvels and, you know, kind of in my role, I've had this love for Captain America, the leadership skills that he has. He doesn't have like superhero powers. He has a super shield and he's a leader. And so that's the one that's inspired me where I've changed. You know, it used to be Superman, kind of Hulk, and then now Captain America as I've evolved. So, you know, but you're right. I like the Peter Parker story. You're with Spider-Man. I mean, every one of those guys has a different side to them that is relative to normal day life, which is really cool. So you ended up heading off to the university, get your Bachelor of Science degree from New York University. Share with us the experiences during your university days and how you knew you wanted to become a behavioral scientist.
So in undergrad, I actually studied computer science, math, and economics. I totally geeked out, and I'll be honest, I didn't really get it. I didn't understand like the entire structure of all these core curriculums. I didn't really like showing up to class. I ended up working a lot in sales on the side. And then what ended up happening was I graduated, tried to do some startups. They didn't work out. And by the time I was about 28, you know, I was heavily in debt from college. I was overweight. I was single. I was like literally the stereotypical image of somebody not living up to their potential. You know, I'd managed to make some friends and stuff like that. But I felt like, you know, I'm decent at the kind of work I do, but nothing remarkable, nothing that stood out. Nobody cared about anything I did. And I came across this crazy study by these two guys, Christakis and Fowler. They asked the question, the obesity epidemic, does it spread from person to person like a cold? Is it that kind of epidemic? Or is it a percentage of the population? Like, if you hang out with somebody who has Alzheimer's, you're not going to get Alzheimer's. It doesn't spread that way. And what they found was startling. If you have a friend who's obese, your chances of obesity increase by 45%. Your friends who do not know them have a 20% increased chance, and their friends have a 5% increased chance. And that's when I realized that if I want to have an exceptional life, just trying to set an alarm in the morning and like going to the gym at 6 a.m. and forcing myself through it wasn't going to cut it. What I needed to do was fundamentally change the nature of my relationships. I needed to connect with people that I really admired, that had the characteristics that I respected. So if I hung out with people who are athletes, then exercise would be a part of my routine, right? Rather than going to a movie and eating a tub of popcorn, I would go to the gym with them. And so I spent the next year trying to figure out how to actually connect with people who are highly influential. And I developed a model, and from that came this project that you probably heard about, the Influencers Dinner.
Yeah, so I want to talk about the influencers there, but I want to talk about your experience in becoming a behavioral scientist and understanding that, you know, you've got to make changes in your life. And what you're saying is you got to surround yourself with people that have some of those habits so you pick them up. Because is that an easier path for people, you know, listening? Or is that the only way to do it? I mean, what?
So there isn't an only way, right? There are some people who are able to really turn their life around from anything from like a traumatic incident, and they have what's called post-traumatic growth. It's the other side of the coin of post-traumatic stress, right? And then there's people who, my general view is it fits into two categories. You're either going to change the conversation that you're having with the people in your life, right? So if I'm married to somebody and we both have unhealthy eating habits, we change the conversation about like, okay, what is it that we're going to allow in the house? What is it going to be our practices? How are we going to manage that? The other side of it is bringing people into my social circles that already have that as part of their life so that it can be contagious. And yeah, frankly, I think that that's much easier, because if you understand how to connect with people and how to build trust with them, then it's natural for them to want to be part of your social circle. And so I've kind of spent the last 12 years trying to understand how to perfect that process.
Well, what you're saying works, because I'm a guy who didn't finish high school, didn't go to college, and started a business in my early 20s and I didn't have any of the experience or the knowledge or the growth that I have, you know, 14, 15 years later. However, I've surrounded myself. I love to get smarter people around me that bring things to the table that I don't. I might be really good at motivating and inspiring people and process, but I'm not good at the accounting, and I'm not good at the management, or I'm not, there's different layers that I've continued to challenge myself to surround myself with smarter, successful people so I can learn from them. So I feel like I need to do better. That's kind of exactly what you're saying. Cause I feel like if I look at the old me 10 years ago, I'm a completely different person. And I didn't read a book. I didn't just do this on my own. I've surrounded myself with other people at different levels so I could grow. So that's how this works. Let me ask you this. I always say,
can I throw in one additional thing?
Yeah.
I think your starting point, though, is essential, which is that you fundamentally have a growth mindset. Your mindset is, I want a better life. I want to do things that inspire me. I'm going to be willing to grapple with myself. And that's the fundamental starting point. Because otherwise, what would happen is, if you didn't have that kind of attitude and you brought people into your life that were really impressive, then jealousy kicks in, right? So you first and foremost have to say, I want an incredible life and I want to surround myself with people who are extraordinary. I want to be proud of them. Because for each additional extraordinary person that I can be their champion, that they're part of my life will grow dramatically.
I'm Jason Waller, True Underdog Podcast, and today's sponsor comes from BetterHelp. Is there something preventing you from achieving your goals? What interferes with your happiness? Check out betterhelp.com/trueunderdog. I personally have a therapist, and I love to talk to them about what's going on in my life and how to better myself. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. Connect in a safe and private online environment. It's so convenient. You can start communicating under 48 hours. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. Licensed professional counselors who are specialized in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping trauma. It doesn't matter what you've got going on. You need to talk to somebody. I want you to start living a happier life today. And as a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/trueunderdog. That's betterhelp.com/trueunderdog. Bam. Very well said. So I believe there's three. This is just my belief, right? And I have a shirt here. It says, love your haters. It's one of our new shirts. And I say that because in my life, a lot of people are like, oh, you live at a trailer park and you don't have an education. There's no way you can do a business. You know, all these things. I've heard all that noise, family members, friends, everybody. And I believe as I've grown and I'm continuing to grow, I'm always trying to better myself. I have a CEO coach. I have a therapist. I do everything I can to empower others and grow myself. But I believe that we all fall into three categories sometimes, and you're a lot smarter than me, so I want to get your opinion on this. Category one is like the dreamers, the doers, the ones that are going out and doing that are willing to grapple with themselves, that promote success and want to be successful, that can coach and be coached, that are happy for people that are successful and want to be around them or be their champion and also want champions. That's category one. I feel like I'm in there today in my life. Category two is those that are intimidated. Other people have outgrown them, family members, friends. And I always think of Bart Simpson sliding back into the trees because they're intimidated. And maybe they think you've outgrown them. You're still the same person, or maybe you have outgrown them. But rather than them piggyback and try to grow as well, they get scared. They go into the dark abyss. So I call that the intimidated type. That's level two. And then level three to me are the haters. Their failure is because of your success. You know, they're always, you know, saying something bad, always trying to bring other people down, never proud of anybody, always, oh, that guy only did that. He lost weight. He's doing, like, they find excuses rather than be happy for people. And I love those people because my goal is to get them to two and then one and make them fans and make them follow. But do you think, am I semi-correct about what I'm saying about these three lays? I've been in all three, by the way. I've been in category three, I've been in category two, and I've been in category one. I try to stay in one. And there's times that I leak over and I got to remind myself, like, I don't want to be that person. And I don't want to be that person. I want to continue to grow and promote champions.
You know, it's interesting. I think that it's really important to understand how toxic that kind of anger can be for people's lives, right? And often I'm asked, okay, if you need to curate the people around you, like select who's around you, what do you do about people who are toxic? And I think you're kind of pointing to this, right? It's, you have these people who are like the level threes that you're talking about, who every fundamental thing, it's somebody else's fault. And there's an excuse or justification. And what's amazing about the human brain is that you will always find evidence for whatever you're looking for. Always. Even if it's not there, especially if it's not there. And so they will find justifications for why you've worked your butt off and you built this successful company and worked with all these NFL franchises and accomplished all this. But, oh, it's only because, you know, when he was 17, he had so-and-so as a school teacher rather than so-and-so, and that's why I'm not successful, right? And so there's this theory called the locus of control, and it works like this. The amount of control that you believe you have on your life will define how much action you take and how positively you kind of view the potential of the world, right? And so some people believe that they have no impact on the world and are just at the effect of everything. Now, you clearly have a very different view of the world. You have a very high locus of control. You say, if I'm not feeling well, great, let's get into action. I know I can figure this out. If my business is starting to lose ground, well, that's not okay. I'm going to figure this out. All right, let's call a team meeting. I need ideas. I don't care if I like the ideas or not. Call me out on stuff because I want to know where the weaknesses are. And if we don't figure that out, we're going to fail, right? And so I think one of the questions is, can we help people find their locus of control? Can we give them a sense that it's not because of this, you know, like whatever it is, it's not, but okay, that's one interpretation, but maybe there is another interpretation that you can actually do something about, right? That you can actually turn things around or make yourself happier and all that kind of stuff. And here's the biggest thing for me. I don't personally have the bandwidth to spend a lot of time with people who are really angry, upset, all that. But I think that it's important to reach out to those who are isolated and lonely, because you'll often find that those who are angry are often also really lonely. And what we've discovered from neuroscience, there's this super cool study done by this guy, Matt Lieberman. He put people into an fMRI. They're scanning their brains. And they're playing a game where they're passing a ball between people. And at a certain point, imagine you're getting your brain scanned, you're in there, and the other people playing just stop passing you the ball and only pass it to each other. And you are now socially isolated in the game and nobody wants to play with you. When looking at the scans of the brain, almost the exact same areas of the brain light up that represent physical pain, like you're hurt, like you broke a bone, as emotional pain, like you are socially isolated, ignored, bullied, made fun of, all of that. And we are used to thinking of physical pain as something worthy of going to jail for, right? You beat somebody up, you go to jail. And emotional pain is whatever, not a big deal. You'll get over it, toughen up. But the truth is that feelings of isolation, loneliness, you know, social separation are so painful to us as human beings because we are social creatures that it's very easy to turn to anger, because at least you feel something. And so my general view is that we need to kind of, like, if there's a problem on a plane, you have to put your face mask on first and then you put it on somebody else. We need to get ourselves to a stable situation and then we can start pulling people in. And as you said, bring them from 3 to 2 and 2 to 1. But loneliness is such a big problem in this country that its health impact is on par with smoking almost a pack a day of cigarettes. It's insanity.
That's horrible. Well, you know, you've created, you know, the Influencers Dinner. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, yeah. So when I started looking at what actually engages and connects highly influential people, I discovered that there's kind of a handful of characteristics, and I explore this in You're Invited. And what I did with that was something completely insane. I invite 12 people at a time to come to my home. They're not allowed to talk about what they do or even give their last name. They cook dinner together. And when they sit down to eat, they get to guess what everybody else does. And they find out they're sitting with Nobel laureates, Olympians, celebrities, Oscar winners, Grammy winners, the occasional princess, the voice of the bark, that won a Grammy for Who Let the Dogs Out. Like, just, you know, ridiculous people. I've hosted over 2,000 people at 227 dinners in 10 cities in 3 countries. And it's turned into what's probably the largest community of its kind in the world.
It's awesome. What are some of the crazy things that happen? I mean, they make friendships, I'm sure, for life. And
oh, yeah.
They don't feel lonely. Yeah. So let's talk about that.
So the secret to the dinner, everybody thinks, oh, bring people over for dinner. The secret to the dinner isn't the dinner. The secret to the dinner is actually that we cook together. You see, human beings build trust, not by like winning people over with gifts and things like that, but through something called the IKEA effect. The IKEA effect states that you disproportionately care about your IKEA furniture because you had to assemble it. So anything we put effort into, we care about disproportionately. So we have the guests come in and actually cook together. And in that process, they bond. They talk about their families and vacations and those things that are important to them. And so we, in an hour, are able to create deeper friendships than if they knew each other for years, like occasionally seeing each other at events. And as a byproduct, then when you sit down and you finally find out who everybody is, you have this equal playing ground where the Nobel laureate is amazed by the Olympian and the Olympian is amazed by the CEO of a major company and they're all impressed with the Nobel laureate. And suddenly you have these friendships form that last for years. And you get these moments where, like, Jordan Harbinger finds out that he's been making guacamole with Regina Spektor and one of the members of Public Enemy, or the former director of the Center for Disease Control, or, you know, all these kind of super interesting people. But one of my favorite moments was when we were all guessing what one particular guy does. And this woman turns to him and we finally find out what he does. And she says, I couldn't like you more as a person and couldn't disagree with you more politically. And she ran, I think, a like left-wing think tank in D.C., and he was the editor-in-chief of The Libertarian. And so I loved it because it demonstrates that when we connect on a human level, it doesn't matter the other stuff, right? These people are probably still friends.
That's good stuff, John. That's good stuff. I mean, I try to think of, you know, being around, surround yourself with people. It doesn't matter what their job is, what their career is. They're still people. You know, we have an adult game night here, and I've got people of all walks of life, you know, people that have, you know, a teacher and an accountant, football players, we're all treat each other the same. But I love the idea of the influencers dinner, dude. Like, that is really cool. I mean, that's inspirational in itself, because you're right. When people aren't intimidated because of your status or your income or your career or your job, all that's off the table and you're just a human being and you're helping each other do something. I can totally see how that's beneficial.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild. And, you know, in the book, I really dive into all these examples. Most of the book has nothing to do with me. Most of it's kind of crazy stories and examples on how to bring these ideas to life. How do you build trust quickly, whether it's with an investor or new employees? How do you connect with anybody, regardless of their status or celebrity, so that they actually want to engage with you, right? One of the things we say is attention is easy. Anybody can get attention. You just have to be a child throwing a tantrum. Interest is difficult. Having people actually be interested and desiring to connect with you. How do we actually accomplish that? That's the kind of stuff we break down in the book.
That's good stuff. So your first book, 2 AM Principle, shed some light on the process, you know, the epic model of adventure.
So my first book was about the science of living an adventurous life. And people would always tell me, oh, you know, adventures are things that happen by chance, right? You can't just plan to have an adventure. And that didn't make any sense to me, because we all have those friends who are like, live really exciting lives, and those that live quieter lives. And so I figured if I could reproduce or understand why they live exciting lives, maybe I could live a more exciting life. And so the epic model is that every adventure follows 4 stages. Establish, where we put the right elements in place, right? If you're with the right people, the most boring party in the world could be amazing. If you're with the wrong people, you could be at the best event and they make your life miserable. And so there are a few other characteristics, like the location you choose and so on. The second is that an adventure, as I define it, is an experience that's exciting and remarkable, like it's worth talking about. Possesses adversity, right? and or risk. And then the third characteristic is that it brings about growth. Like fundamentally, if you didn't grow from the experience, it was nice, but it wasn't an adventure. And so the second stage of the adventure, the P in the epic model, is push boundaries. You have to cross some kind of social, physical, or emotional boundary. Whether it's convince a bouncer to let you in, even though you shouldn't be allowed, or, you know, it could be climb some big mountain and really push yourself past that breaking point. The third characteristic is increase. That's where you maximize the emotional value of wherever you are. So you've gotten into the party, you're at the top of the mountain. Now what are you doing? What is it that you're going to get as much value of that experience? Are you going to talk to people or are you going to be a wallflower? And then final stages continue, which is you have to, there's a series of kind of characteristics where you decide if you're going to go and loop through the process again or if you're going to end with style. And it's really, really important that adventures end well. And the reason is human beings are affected by something called the peak end rule. Have you ever heard of this?
I have not.
All right. It's kind of like this funny quirk. So imagine you're back in your single days and you're in the most amazing date of your life. You're 3 hours in. And just as you're about to lean in for the kiss, your date says the most awful thing you have ever heard in your life. You go home. Your friend says, good date or bad date? What do you say?
Bad date, because it ended bad.
Exactly. Human beings don't process the length of pleasure or pain. What we remember are the peaks of experiences and how they end disproportionately, which means that most people, when they go out for exciting experiences and they're like, oh yeah, I'm meeting up with my friends, we're going to Vegas, whatever it is, they end up at like 4 o'clock in the morning at a pizza place, letting things dwindle down into nothingness. The key is end on a more positive note earlier, and you'll probably end up remembering it more positively and also then feel better as a byproduct. So there's a lot of things about adventure that you can use science to actually make the experience significantly better.
Some good gems, John. So how can everybody find you? Because this has been really cool. Like, I mean, I'm learning so much just from our conversation. I know the listeners are getting that. How can they find your books? How can they find you?
So my book is available everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Like, you can Google You're Invited and John Levy and you'll find it. As far as me, my website's John Levy TLB, JonLevy, T like Thomas, L like Lion, B like Boy. And I'm on all social channels as John Levy TLB, from Clubhouse to Facebook, Instagram. I'm super easy to get a hold of. Feel free to reach out if you have any questions.
I love Clubhouse. I'm going to have to follow you on Clubhouse. I'm a big fan of Clubhouse. So I'm kind of new to Clubhouse, but I'm loving it. Well, listen, John, this has been great. Community isn't about you knowing one person. It's about everyone knowing one another, connected by drawing people in with the novelty and curation. Gain trust through joint effort, not gifts and meals. Thank you, John. Great gems. I appreciate you being on the True Underdog Podcast. Bam!
And that concludes another episode here on True Underdog. If you're interested in hearing more, make sure you subscribe at iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or the YouTube channel. You can always visit trueunderdog.com, subscribe to all of them. Make sure you check out our newest episodes coming out on Mondays and Thursdays. True Underdog, baby.
Bam. True Underdog. Bam.